This versus Sanchez-Urias. Mr. Sandiford, are you ready?
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Dean Sandiford, and I represent Magdiel Sanchez-Urias. The sole issue in this appeal is whether the District Court clearly erred in finding that Mr. Sanchez could pay a fine. The clear error standard is deferential, but we meet it because of two factual mistakes the Court made. The first mistake was the Court's finding that Mr. Sanchez had, quote, offered nothing to show he could not pay a fine. In fact, there was ample evidence in the record showing he couldn't pay a fine, most notably the financial affidavit he submitted for appointment of counsel. The Court's second mistake was its finding that there was evidence in the record suggesting that he had assets from which he could pay a fine. The Court pointed to two things, his pre-arrest income and the fact that he was driving a car when he was arrested. But neither of those showed that he had assets. As for his pre-arrest income, he lost that job when he was arrested. The affidavit showed that he had only $300 on hand at the time he was arrested, and the income information didn't account for necessary expenses other than rent, including utilities, food, transportation, health care, and other such things. For those reasons, the Court shouldn't have imposed a fine. The record established that Mr. Sanchez was essentially broke and couldn't pay a fine.
What about Guideline 5E1.2? And you're right, it talks about being unable to pay, but it also says, and is unlikely to become able to pay. And this is a person who was making $3,000 a month, had an automobile, sending money back to Mexico. If he were to come back to the United States, why couldn't he pay it? And why couldn't he earn money in Mexico to pay it?
Well, I think it's possible that he could, but that wasn't the basis upon which the Court imposed a fine. There's two bases on which the Court can impose a fine, present ability to pay or future earnings ability to pay in the future. The Court here based the fine only on the first, that he had what the Court said was he has assets available to him from which he can pay a fine. So it's theoretically possible that the Court could have imposed a fine on the future ability to pay basis, but that's not an appropriate grounds for affirmance because it's a factual question. And we don't know how the Court would come out because he's not back in the United States. He's in Mexico, and while he was earning fairly decent money here, his income in Mexico, at least in the past, was very meager. So without a finding from the Court, it wouldn't be an appropriate basis for affirmance here. And I don't think it would even be an appropriate basis for affirmance on harmless error grounds because there you would really need overwhelming evidence that he would be able to pay the fine in the future, and not knowing his situation, Mexico, I mean, he was making $145 every 2 weeks last time he was in Mexico, and he's already been deported back there, so I don't think you can affirm on that ground either.
Who has the burden of persuasion on the issue?
I believe under the guidelines that the defense does.
So the judge doesn't need to make findings, the judge needs to only determine I'm not persuaded, isn't that right?
Well, that's true, and I think
generally someone who refuses to give information, you can draw an inference from that. So I don't think I'd be very persuaded by someone who's unwilling to give financial information. What would be irrational about my drawing that inference, which I think is what the judge did?
Well, I don't think it would be irrational, but I would disagree that that's what the judge did. What the judge said was, you didn't provide financial information, and the inference that she drew from that is that, so you've offered me nothing from which I can say you can't pay a fine. So what the judge is saying, the judge isn't drawing a negative inference based on evasiveness. What the judge is saying is, you didn't provide any evidence, so you failed in your burden of proof.
But 5 months had passed. Could have inherited money.
It's theoretically possible. I mean, he was in jail.
Isn't it his burden?
It is his burden. I mean, I don't think the Court would assume something so speculative as that. I mean, the idea of him inheriting money, he doesn't have anyone in the United States except a girlfriend. You know, he's sitting in a jail cell. He'd lost his job.
It's his burden to show that he didn't acquire any assets in that five-month period, isn't it?
I suppose it's his burden to show inability to pay. I don't know.
And another point is that one of the first factors is deterrence in the list of factors that the judge considered. That was her primary reason, wasn't it? To deter him from coming back in the United States because it was evidence. We had two prior convictions, which were misdemeanors, could have been felonies, and there was some evidence apparently that he had crossed back and forth 22 times before that. So wasn't deterrence a really strong reason here?
It absolutely was, and that's a factor the court can consider, and we're not complaining about her reliance on the judge's reliance on that. But the judge also, in order to impose a fine under the guidelines, has to make findings about inability to pay. Those findings were essential to the court's ruling, or at least an essential part, and under cases like Washington Williams, if you have a material error of fact that infects an otherwise correct ruling, it's still clearly erroneous and has to be vacated. So despite...
You finish. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no, it's okay. I was just going to say, despite her correct... We were not complaining about the deterrence. There was this other error that infected the overall imposition of the fine.
You're asking us essentially to parse the oral statement from a judge at a hearing when there's a very common sense explanation here, and maybe it wasn't expressed as we would after circulating opinion to our colleagues and getting feedback and all that stuff. We don't really review the oral statements from district judges that way, or we reverse every decision they made. Aren't you asking us to, you're parsing one sentence. He didn't put on any evidence. I would have thought that means refused to provide any evidence and didn't put on any evidence. The other evidence was there already. That's perhaps not the most precise way of saying it, but isn't that fair in the circumstances? Aren't you saying, what are we going to do? Send it back down and ask her to say it right? Is that a good use of judicial resources?
Well, no, but I think that, well, for two reasons. I don't think we're parsing anything here. I'm not just picking out an isolated sentence here. This was a short ruling. What she says is, you've offered me nothing, and she doesn't just say it once. At the end, when the defense counsel objects on page 54, she repeats it again, that he's offered nothing.
And He did offer nothing. Isn't that correct? He didn't provide any information.
Well, there was information in the pre-sentence report that came from his girlfriend, and there's the financial affidavit that he had provided, which is essentially the same as what she wanted him to say to the probation officer. Here you've got a sworn out-of-court statement.
And why didn't he say it to the probation officer?
Well, the explanation for that isn't in the record. And I think the reason it's not in the record is because the judge wasn't drawing any kind of nefarious motive here that defense counsel felt a need to rebut. All she was saying is, you haven't offered me any evidence. She wasn't saying, Mr. Sanchez, I think you're being evasive and hiding assets because you're not speaking to the probation officer.
So are you advocating for a rule that if a defendant qualifies for appointed counsel and has filled out a financial affidavit showing that not sufficient assets to hire counsel, that there can't be a fine?
I don't know that we're arguing. Well, definitely not, because for one thing, if the fine's based on future earnings, the fact that the defendant doesn't presently have the ability to pay a fine. But when it's based on present ability to pay a fine, the guidelines do say that that's a significant indicator. Now, I mean, obviously we're dealing here with a smallish fine. It's $1,000. You can imagine a situation where someone could pay a $1,000 fine but not have the funds to hire a lawyer and would still qualify for appointed counsel. So we're not arguing for a categorical rule, but it's an important indication. The guidelines say it's an important indication.
Did no one mention this other evidence you're referring to at the hearing?
Well, the judge.
Can we really think that the judge ignored what was said about the ability to pay?
Well, the judge referenced this. The judge was the one who relied on this affidavit that we're relying on now. She relied on the income information. It's that same affidavit that says he doesn't own any assets, including a car, and that he only had $300 to his name. So this evidence was front and center in front of the judge. She was reading from it at the hearing.
So she says you've offered no evidence, but she clearly knew about the evidence you're referring to. So is she really saying you haven't offered any evidence, or you haven't come forward as you have? I mean, what's the most reasonable explanation? If it's so obvious that something had been presented to her and she considered it, and that was inadequate, and then she says you provided no evidence.
Well, I mean,
what do you think she really means there?
Well, I think she still means offered no evidence. She wasn't focused on those parts of the affidavit. She was focusing on the parts that she thought showed that he did have income. And this was a very short ruling. There wasn't a whole lot of analysis going into this, and it's also something that kind of came up for the first time at sentencing. No one was asking for a fine. So this is not something that was, you know, on people's minds going into the hearing. Unless the court has further questions, I've reserved the remainder of my time.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Sandiford. May it please the court, Paul Farley for the government. The guideline at issue here provides that the court shall impose a fine in all cases except where the defendant establishes that he is unable to pay and is not likely to become able to pay any fine. Thus, the defendant has the burden of showing both that he is unable to pay the fine at the time of sentencing and in the future. Otherwise, there is a presumption that the district court will impose a fine. And the battle that the defense pitched below and here again on appeal concentrates on the current ability of the defendant to pay, which sidesteps the question of his ability to pay going forward. At sentencing, the defense's only argument was that the defendant had been incarcerated for 5 months and therefore unable to work. He also doesn't have any money saved from a time prior to being in custody. So he will be deported, and the place where he'll be really rebuilding from financial scratch at that time. So it's saying,
and also, and she asserts unverified that he owned a car.
Well,
in her argument, too,
that would be the objection they made. The actual sort of affirmative argument is as I've stated. Then the court went through the lack of cooperation, the income and expense statement, as well as the vehicle question. And so, and then it decided that given, setting all that to one side, there's still a strong deterrent effect. So after the court announced its sentencing decision, the defense objected as to the car. I don't believe that's something that's proven or borne out here. And as to what he earned prior to his arrest in this case, I don't think that would go to his present ability to pay. Then restated that he had been in custody for 5 months and he was likely to be deported. So, to bring this back, the defense had the burden of demonstrating not only a present inability, but also a future inability. It did not make an argument as to the future inability to pay going forward. They only said that once he was deported, he'd be starting from scratch. But since the objection only addressed the present ability to pay, the court wasn't obligated to make specific findings or address an argument regarding going forward. The court rules on what the parties have placed before the court. Again, the burden is on the defense to elicit from the court a ruling both as to present ability and future ability. The argument was pitched on present ability. There was no argument made as to the future ability. The court did not have to make a ruling on that. The Perez-Menez case, which I think both sides have cited in their briefing, kind of makes this point. In that case, the court found that the defendant didn't have any dependents and that his daughter was now 18 years old. There was no objection to those findings. And the court said that consequently, this court said, that the district court would have had no obligation to consider the burden of any fine on his daughter on the ground that she was dependent. There was no objection to that below. So in this case, the court wasn't required to spend time on the defendant's future ability to pay, where there was neither a specific argument nor a specific objection.
Are you conceding then that with respect to present ability to pay, to the extent that the district court would have relied on that, that would have been improper?
I would not concede that, Your Honor. I was just presenting this because I think it's the easier way to resolve the case. When you have the burden of persuasion as to two points and you don't argue one of the points, it sort of doesn't matter on the other one.
So defend reliance on present ability, inability.
That's certainly my reading of the record and the arguments, that it was all about present ability. Because future ability
How do you respond with respect to present ability? You say,
"Oh, I'm sorry.
You're not conceding error in that regard."
Certainly, as to present ability, the financial affidavit, first of all, is sort of an ex parte or self-serving affidavit. It's good so far as it goes. at the time that he was, this financial affidavit was in December of 2016. Sentencing was in May 8th. Okay? And so we don't know what occurred after that. At the time of sentencing, the court has to be satisfied that there's not an ability to pay. Things may have happened in between. There is the failure to cooperate.
There's nothing in the record about why, is that right?
They're beyond advice of counsel. Counsel advised not to cooperate. It's in the page 36 of the PSR, paragraph 53. Upon advice of counsel, the defendant did not provide financial information. That's what we know.
But we do know that PSR, probation department, concluded he didn't have the ability to pay.
Based upon what they have.
And the cases say he can rely on that.
The court can rely on that, and the cases all say the court can rely on the fact that the defendant didn't cooperate in the intervening 6 months to provide information. I think Your Honor made the point that it would have been easy enough to say nothing's changed. We're exactly where we were. But there was not even that kind of offering to the court. So I think the court was well justified in not being persuaded by the record before it on the current ability to pay. But there's nothing on the future.
Let me just ask one question. But you would also concede that it would have been proper for the judge to find that there wasn't current ability to pay based on the record.
I think the court could have gone either way on that. I think that this is in that area where the court can evaluate the defendant's demeanor and you know, whatever else is going on. So I think the court could have well found either way.
The government, of course, did not ask for a fine. Was that simply because it's too big of a pain in the neck as opposed to weighing the merits of the fine?
In these kinds of cases, typically the government doesn't ask for a fine for precisely the reason the court indicated in its order, which was we expect this individual to be deported and they're not going to be making an effort to pay the fine. So why ask for a fine that is not going to be paid? The court's rationale, as you saw, is that, well, I've got to do something. We've got 22 illegal reentries. What can we do to deter this behavior going forward? So, I have really nothing further unless there are further questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.
You have plenty of time for rebuttal if you'd like to.
On what the prosecutor said about why the prosecutor didn't want to fine, the prosecutor said there was a lack of holdings in the United States. So the prosecutor wasn't just saying, oh, it's a pain to collect the fine. The prosecutor was saying, this guy can't pay a fine. So just to clarify that. And the future ability to pay theory, I already made this argument, so I'll keep it brief, but that's not an appropriate basis for affirmance because that's not the ruling the judge made. If you look at the judge's ruling, it's based solely on this finding that he had assets available to him from which he could pay a fine presently. So, you know, your options to affirm on future ability to pay in that circumstance when it wasn't the basis of the judge's ruling are affirming on an alternative ground, which isn't available because it's a factual question, and harmless error, which is also unavailable because the evidence isn't
available. Why isn't it available even though it's a factual question when it's his burden to establish that he has no future ability to pay?
Well, it's because the ruling under review is a ruling only on the current ability to pay. This court, as an appellate court, doesn't find facts, and that's essentially what you would have to do to affirm on that ground.
We can find that there are no facts, can't we? We do that all the time.
Well, it would have to be that there's no way the court could say, I won't impose a fine based on future ability to pay. You could do it under harmless error, but to affirm on a factual basis that the court didn't find, you'd essentially have to find those facts.
We can affirm on the basis the defendant didn't meet his burden of proof because he didn't put on any proof that he had no future ability to pay.
That's what I should have said.
Well,
you're welcome.
Well, again, I still think that's outside the scope of what this court's ruling was. Judge Krieger clearly thought he had assets from which he could pay a fine, and so that's what defense counsel responded to. Now, you have to understand.
She didn't clearly say that. She said, I want to deter you from coming back here. That's primarily.
That was primarily, but she also said, she also said that there are or were assets available to him from which he could pay a fine. That was the finding on the ability to pay. That's a finding on present ability. And that's, of course, what defense counsel responded to, because you have to remember, a fine wasn't on the table until everyone got to the sentencing hearing. Probation wasn't asking for one. The government wasn't asking for one. This is something that was essentially sprung on defense counsel at the time. So, of course, she's going to respond to what the court's concerns were, which were solely these notions that he had the ability to pay a fine at this time. Unless the court has further questions, I'd see the remainder of my time.
Thank you. Case is submitted.